cry of our hearts. And you came down, freely you gave us your love. Make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is darkness, let me shine light. And may your love cause us to open up, cause us to open up. That we do without love, it means nothing. Grant us the courage to give as your calling. Make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow. Where there is darkness, let me shine light. And may your love cause us to open up, cause us to open up our hearts. May your light cause us to shine so bright that we bring hope into the dark.
As you
If ever the world were made of head and socket, a globe outlined in a geodesic dome, like the one painted in primary colors in the schoolyard down the street, would we actually see the disjointedness of it all? The places where ball had popped out of alignment, our breath affected by the punctures in the atmosphere. Because from where I stand with you today, after that long hike, pebbles falling off the mountain's face as our feet grasped and we climbed, little looks angular. The sky is only curved to meet the land, and I can practically feel the sun exploding in my eyes. I am dazed, drunk on that hot golden juice of our giant star. I am satisfied to be here with you. And still you know that while this hilltop of holy encounter is necessary for the life of the soul, it is not our end. Rather, our telos is always that growing edge, the place where ash becomes bud. And so we go back into the trees, and I notice those tree branches snapping as we move like bone, like humerus and scapula or femur and pelvis falling out of belonging. And I am not convinced. Could life really come from this pointed canopy of branches, crossing, breaking, bare against the cold sky?
Glory and grace. Hello and welcome to Worship at the Table on February 14th. We are so grateful you are here. My name is Linda Duhirsu, and alongside Matt Smith, I serve as co-pastor to this community of faith. We long to be a community which celebrates God's unconditional love for all, and here at the table, we believe that for God, all truly does mean all. We are grateful that in more and more communities, those who are 65 and over are beginning to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. This is really good news, and we hope you all are finding ways to begin negotiating the systems which are trying to vaccinate those who are most vulnerable and on the front lines first. We are going to continue, though, to share worship from our homes to your homes for the foreseeable future until we are assured that it is safe for all of us to gather again. If you would like to learn some more about our community of faith and how it is we share life together here at the table, you can take a really easy next step and text the word new to the number that's on the screen, or you can go to our website, thetableumc.org, and find a connect pop-up in the bottom right-hand corner. Both of these avenues will help you connect with us and us connect with you so that you can learn a little bit more about the table. When you're ready to go a little bit deeper and learn more about our story and be with others in a small group, we invite you to consider joining a series that Pastor Matt and I teach together called Growing in Faith. We will begin a new series this Tuesday. That's just in a few days, February 16th, and it goes for 6 weeks through March 23rd. If you would like to join us, we would love for you to register for that today. There's a link in the comments, plus you can go to our website, thetableumc.org. Today is the final week of our worship series called Anchored in the Current, where we are holding our lives in conversation with the readings from the Gospel of Mark and the wisdom and writings of Dr. Howard Thurman. We're going to continue to move in worship now with a piece that we love. It's by Ranky Tanky, and it's called Stand By Me.
Stand by me. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, is it good for us to be here? Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my child, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen, until after the child of humanity had risen from the dead.
When you're right here, Lord, I don't want to rush on ahead in my own strength. When you're right here, I'm not in a hurry. When it comes to your spirit, when it comes to your presence, when it comes to your voice, I'm learning to listen, just to rest in your nearness. I'm starting to notice you are speaking. Lord, I want to love thy, I want to feel what you feel. I want to see what you see. Lord, I want to love like you. I want to feel what you feel. I want to see what you see. I'm not in a hurry when it comes to your spirit, when it comes to your presence, when it comes to your voice. I'm learning to listen, just to rest in your nearness. I'm starting to notice you are speaking. I'm not in a hurry when it comes to your spirit, when it comes to your presence,
when it comes to your voice. I'm learning to listen, just to rest in your nearness. I'm starting to notice you are speaking. Open my eyes, I want to see you. Open my ears, I want to hear you speak. Tell me your thoughts, what's on your mind. I'll be your friend, I want to see through your eyes. Open my eyes, I want to see you more clearly. Open my ears, I want to hear you speak. Tell me your thoughts, what's on your mind. I'll be your friend, I want to see through your eyes. 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 I'm not in a hurry when it comes to your spirit, when it comes to your presence, when it comes to your voice. I'm learning to listen, just to rest in your nearness. I'm starting to notice you are speaking. I'm not in a hurry. In your nearness, I'm starting to notice you are speaking.
Times are out of joint. I don't know what I would have said or thought if a year ago you had told me that we all wear face masks when leaving home, that it isn't safe to break bread with friends indoors, that theaters are padlocked and concerts are a distant memory. Times are out of joint. I am sharing a message for Sunday morning into a cell phone here on Thursday, and the cell phone is atop a tripod sitting on our family's dining room table. A 43-year-old quarterback playing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just routed Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City in Super Bowl 55. Times are out of joint. It's been 49 weeks since we gathered in person in the sanctuary for worship, and it doesn't look as though we will again anytime in the immediate future. 2,341,351 people have died around the world from coronavirus. Times are out of joint. Just this last week, a local government meeting in England, it became an internet sensation overnight when the Zoom gathering, local government gathering, descended into chaos, and members started insulting one another, swearing at each other. At one point, one was, quote, laughing like a hyena. People were kicked out. Eventually, the person who was brought in to facilitate the actual local government meeting sarcastically said that everyone should now call her Britney Spears. Times are out of joint, and people have lost their reason. Dr. Howard Thurman wrote those very words in the epigraph to his 1956 book titled The Growing Edge. Here is the entirety of that epigraph, that 1956 poem. Dr. Thurman writes, "All around us, worlds are dying, and new worlds are being born. All around us, life is dying, and life is being born. The fruit ripens on the tree. The roots are silently at work in the darkness of the earth against the time when there shall be new leaves, fresh blossoms, green fruit. Such is the growing edge. It is the extra breath from the exhausted lung. The one more thing to try when all else has failed. The upward reach of life when weariness closes in upon all endeavor. This is the basis of hope in moments of despair. The incentive to carry on when times are out of joint and people have lost their reason. The source of confidence when worlds crash and dreams whiten into ash. The birth of a child, life's most dramatic answer to death. This is the growing edge incarnate. Look well to the growing edge. Worlds crash and dreams whiten into ash. In the verses which lead up to the reading assigned to the global Christian church for today from the Gospel of Mark, just before Jesus led Simon Peter and James and John up a high mountain apart by themselves, where Jesus would be transfigured before them, as we heard in today's reading from Mark 9, in the chapter before, Jesus first shares openly that he must suffer, die, and rise again. Simon Peter's worlds crash upon hearing Jesus foretell of suffering and death. His dreams seem to whiten to ash upon hearing that Jesus sees himself moving into suffering and death and then rising. And in that moment, Simon Peter takes Jesus aside, and we're told that he rebukes Jesus. And I imagine Simon Peter whispering to Jesus on the side, "There are other ways we could do this." I imagine that he worried that Jesus had lost his reason, and he wanted to convince Jesus that there were other ways through. And Jesus would have none of it. He doubles down. Jesus goes on in that moment, just before going up the mountain, to share perhaps his most challenging message of all. Anyone who wishes to follow Jesus must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow him. It's just after hearing this hard, almost maybe always impossible truth, that Jesus leads Simon Peter and James and John up a high mountain apart by themselves for what might just be the object lesson of all object lessons. Chapter 9 of Mark's gospel continues. It picks up from there 6 days later, 6 days after Jesus had shared with the others that he would have to face suffering and death and rise again, 6 days after Simon Peter had rebuked and pushed back on this, and instead Jesus had doubled down, saying that to follow him meant that you would need to take up and do so with your own cross. 6 days after all of that, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. Maybe they needed time. time to sit with all of that. And today's reading is at the exact midpoint of Mark's gospel. This, friends, is no coincidence. Over the first 8 chapters in the gospel of Mark, we encounter Jesus in the synagogue and in homes, casting out all that is not sacred, restoring relationships, healing and liberating. The first 8 chapters, you might say, climb up the mountain. And then today, in the 9th chapter in the Gospel of Mark, we witness the mystery, which the Christian church has come to call the transfiguration atop the highest mountain, as a way of preparing, it seems, to look ahead to the final 8 chapters, in which we'll descend down toward the valley of the shadows of death, and eventually an empty tomb outside of Jerusalem. One commentary that I read this week talked about it this way. The transfiguration stands as the fulcrum, the pivot point between these 2 great movements in Mark's symphony. And I can't pretend to tell you what happened there at this pivot, at this fulcrum, at this top point of this mountain in the middle point of Mark's gospel. And honestly, I don't think that describing the details or defending the historicity is the point. It seems actually the farthest from the point. The story of Jesus's transfiguration is a story of mystery and direct encounter. Direct encounter with the divine. Perhaps that's its very power. It's in that moment, atop that mountain, that time and space collapse. The disciples look upon and see Jesus in the most luminous of clothing, listening to the ancient prophets, Elijah and Moses, as they talk with him, all of them amid the dazzling light of God. The story of Jesus's transfiguration in Mark 9 seems to be an attempt, maybe a feeble one, but a powerful one, to put into words a direct experience with the divine. Howard Thurman had many of those direct experiences, some atop mountains like this and others in valleys and throughout all different topographies. Barbara Brown Taylor reflected upon, shared about one of those experiences which Thurman had in his own life. She does this in a book that's called Anchored in the Current. And in her essay in that book, writing about Howard Thurman, Barbara Brown Taylor shares this story. Once, when Thurman was a young boy living in Daytona Beach, he walked alone along the edge of the ocean one night. And she picks up Thurman's journal writing. Thurman writes, "I held my breath against the night and watched the stars etch their brightness on the face of darkened canopy of the heavens." Thurman continued, "I had the sense that all things, the sand, the sea, the stars, the night, and I, were one lung through which all of life breathed." If you have never had that experience, she writes, Howard Thurman could not have explained it to you any more than he could have explained why he first felt the unity of all living things while leaning against an old live oak tree in his backyard as a boy. Direct experience is difficult to communicate, even when it communicates the most important reality of all. High atop the mountain, long ago, direct experience with the divine left the disciples feeling overwhelmed and afraid. Simon Peter does what he so often does. He interrupts the ineffable mystery and the power by suggesting a way forward. "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make 3 dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." And maybe Simon Peter was like genuinely wanting to help mark that moment. Maybe he was feeling overwhelmed by the wonder, and he simply needed to retract into something familiar to him, to build something, anything, to just keep himself busy in that moment. Perhaps the mystery of it all is just so much that he's feeling in his own body this impulse to domesticate or control the power of what he's just witnessed. Or maybe as Mark suggests, maybe he's just plain terrified. Terrified and grasping in the moment for anything to take away the fear. Things have been really out of joint, and that is something that I can certainly relate to. Whatever the case, in that moment on the mountaintop, God interrupts this chattering of Simon Peter. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my child, the beloved. Listen to him." A voice proclaimed Jesus as God's beloved amid the waters of the River Jordan. And now, here we are, halfway through the Gospel of Mark, some 8 chapters later, high atop a mountain, and that same proclamation is echoed once more. "This is my child, the beloved. Listen to him." Mark's Gospel continues. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Humanity had risen from the dead. So they kept the matter to themselves, questioning what this rising from the dead could mean. The team of creatives, artists, scholars, pastors, theologians at Salt Project said it powerfully this week in a blog which they shared, and I want to offer to you. They write, "Mark's central point in the Transfiguration story is this: the suffering and death of Jesus may at first appear as unthinkable, a desecrating defeat, but it's actually a step toward a dramatic, subversive victory. Jesus will now venture into the shadows of death precisely in order to scatter those shadows once and for all, overcoming them in the end with shimmering light. Jesus will go down into the depths of what can only be called God forsaken, precisely in order to lift up the world into renewed intimacy with God. So take heart and listen to him." That is, continue to trust and walk with Jesus, following in his footsteps and taking up his mantle, dare I add, cross, even though the path ahead now seems strewn with danger and disgrace. Radiant beauty awaits on the other side of Golgotha. And given all that's happening in our world today, listening to Jesus, for me, feels like no simple task. We live in a moment which, again, to quote Dr. Thurman, the times are out of joint, and people have lost their reason, while worlds crash and dreams whiten into ash. Jesus's transfiguration on the mountaintop seems to invite us to experience the mystery and the depth and the wonder of God's luminous darkness without turning away, or perhaps better yet, by turning toward those places of dying, grieving. To hold the power or depth of that, I want to again turn to Howard Thurman's poetry. hear these words once more. All around us, worlds are dying and new worlds are being born. All around us, life is dying and life is being born. The fruit ripens on the tree. The roots are silently at work in the darkness of the earth, against the time when there shall be new leaves, fresh blossoms, green fruit. Such is the growing edge. It is the extra breath from the exhausted lung. The one more thing to try when all else has failed. The upward reach of life when weariness closes in upon all endeavor. This is the basis of hope in moments of despair. The incentive to carry on when times are out of joint and people have lost their reason. The source of confidence when worlds crash and dreams whiten into ash. The birth of a child, life's most dramatic answer to death. This is the growing edge incarnate. Look well to the growing edge. Simon Peter offers to build three dwellings, but Jesus there on the mountaintop declines. God's beloved is again on the move, walking down headlong into the shadows of empire toward the growing edge. Howard Thurman in his life was reclaiming Jesus as one whose entire life was about communicating what Thurman described as a technique of survival for the oppressed. Dr. Thurman was himself a black man born as the virusy of white body supremacy raged then as now. The young Thurman was raised by a grandmother who herself experienced enslavement. So when Dr. Howard Thurman calls the growing edge the basis of hope in moments of despair, the incentive to carry on, he does so while taking his own place among the long, long line of those, like Jesus, who lived with their backs against the wall. So dare I, should any of us feel overwhelmed because times are out of joint, should we find ourselves spiraling into the shadows, into times or feelings of depression, because we find ourselves losing our reason, I believe we would do well to listen deeply to Dr. Thurman, to truly dwell with him, wondering, what is the growing edge in my own life? What is the growing edge in your life? What will it be? What will it be, or how will it be for you to look well to the growing edge? To look well when you're about to lose your reason because times are so deeply out of joint? I've held that question these last weeks, and I know I will take it with me in the weeks ahead, but if that image, that question about the growing edge still feels somehow elusive for you, my hope is that this evocative reflection from the Dean of Duke University's chapel, Dr. Luke A. Powery, might be a guide for at least some of us. Dr. Powery writes, "The growing edge is present in life and in ministry. For Thurman, he even found companionship and hope in oak trees throughout his childhood. The growing edge is everywhere if we have eyes to see, even in trees." In March 2000, horrendous floods hit the country of Mozambique, leaving many homes and lives threatened and lost, it was a sea of death, literally. Life was dying. One woman, known then as Miss Pedro, climbed into a tree for safety and shelter once the floods overwhelmed her home. Some of her relatives, including her grandmother, were killed in the floods. Worlds crashed. Miss Pedro was in the tree for 3 days when the unimaginable happened. She gave birth to a daughter. An African tree became a contemporary tree of life. Life was also being born. Roots were silently at work beyond human sight. In the midst of the groaning of creation, in the midst of a sea of death, labor pains gave birth to life and love in the form of a newborn baby. Fruit ripened on a tree literally through the birth of a child, life's most dramatic answer to death. This, he writes, is a poignant example of the growing edge incarnate. Hope wins, life wins, God wins. Look well to the growing edge. So, friends, may we find our way by looking well to the growing edge. Amen.
Thanks so much, Pastor Matt, for your message and for your invitation to all of us to remember that hope wins, life wins, God wins. And in order to hold that posture, I believe what Howard Thurman teaches us is that we must be connected to our own inward sea, in which we place an altar. And on that altar, among other things, is our hope in God's love being the prevailing force for reckoning and reconciliation. So I want to invite us to turn now, holding that and all of these words shared from Pastor Matt, and turn to prayer. And we will be guided once more by the words of Howard Thurman. Let us pray.
Lord, Lord, open unto me. Open unto me light for my darkness. Open unto me courage for my fear. Open unto me hope for my despair. Open unto me peace for my turmoil. Open unto me joy for my sorrow. Open unto me strength for my weakness. Open unto me wisdom for my confusion. Open unto me forgiveness for my sins. Open unto me tenderness for my toughness. Open unto me love for my hates. Open unto me thyself for myself. Lord, Lord, open unto me.
Amen. Amen. Friends, we close this worship series as we look ahead to the season of Lent. You may learn more about this on our website, but the season of Lent begins with Ash Wednesday, and we are in our homes, and so like so many other things, we will share ashes differently. You may pick up ashes this Tuesday, February 16th at Table Farm from 4 to 5 p.m. Table Farm is at 23rd Street and Anita Avenue in Hollywood Park in the Sacramento area. Please bring with you a small container and a spoon or something to scoop your ashes into. If you don't have ashes, please don't worry. We will invite you to use some oil that we hope you all have in some form in your homes. We are in this together, and you can't make a mistake or do it wrong. We will celebrate Ash Wednesday online this Wednesday, February 17th at 6 p.m. Part of living life together is giving generously, and you may share with our community of faith, the table, by doing something that we call an offering. And this may be something new for you. Or maybe giving generously is already a spiritual discipline that you practice. There are a number of ways to do this at the table. You may find our online giving on the website, thetableumc.org, and just go there, move to the right where it says give. There's a drop-down menu there. It says give online. And there are choices for you to express your generosity today and into the future. You may also text to give to the number that's on the screen, and you can fill in any amount which will go to support our life together. Every way that we reach in love and share generously makes a difference as we seek to anchor our lives in God while so many currents are swirling around us. We send you forth this day with a song in the hope that you may have experienced some revival during this worship series, so that you are inspired to take whatever next step you need to take this week as you root your life in grace, grow in faith, reach in love, and find ways to give generously. This is Omari Tao and our music team with Revival. We hope so much to see you Wednesday at our Ash Wednesday evening service. And again, next Sunday, as we have the first Sunday in Lent.
I try to run, but I grow weary. I try to walk, and I grow faint. Oh, I long to soar on the wings like an eagle, but I look down and I'm afraid. I'm afraid. But you lift me higher out of the fire. singing revival.
Revival
song.
Revival.
I'm singing revival.
Revival.
Revival song.
Revival.
I tried to find you, but lost my way. I walked in the darkness in search of day. I follow your footsteps to the gates of the city. I saw your face. Oh, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. 'Cause you lift me higher out of the fire, out of the flames. I lost the fear, but you gave me meaning again. You lift me higher out of the fire, out of the flames. I lost the fear, but you gave me meaning again. Sing it.
Revival
song.
Revival.
I'm singing revival.
Revival.
Revival song.
Revival.
Oh, you give me meaning. You give me meaning.
Revival.
Oh, revival song.
Revival.
Oh, I'm singing revival.
Revival.
Yeah. Revival song, yeah.
Revival.